Danny V checks in. Danny, how's life down there in Cali?
It's going. You know, it's kind of that time of year where it's bittersweet. You get to the World Series, you spend all this time figuring out who's going to be there, and then we're left with four wins left on the schedule, and so it's kind of bittersweet with baseball season coming to an end, but we got a hell of a matchup in front of us, that's for sure.
You know, I think, especially over the past decade, you've always been like, well, the Yankees got the best record in the AL, the Dodgers got the best record in the NL, so it's not going to be them, because that never happens. But I want to start with the passing of Fernando Valenzuela. Being old, I lived Fernando mania. Even in New York, it was captivating. You know, that complete game victory in Game 3 of the 81 series. You're wired into the world of MLB. Kind of what's standing out to you about all the accolades and honestly, just the love people have for this guy?
Yeah, I would say two things. I think what he meant, not just for Dodgers baseball, but baseball in his home country and in Southern California in particular, is really where his biggest impact was felt. You look at Dodger Stadium now in Los Angeles in Southern California, there is a very large Mexican demographic. And for him to bring his heritage along and not only do it while celebrating his heritage, but also dominating the game of baseball and really giving his culture and his country the exposure it needed for it to thrive. Statistically speaking here, one note comes to mind, and I heard this on KHDK radio in Sacramento this morning. His first eight starts, eight complete games, five of those eight were shutouts. So he started his career out. I mean, complete games this year, I think, I want to say it was Christopher Sanchez of the Phillies that led the league with three complete games. Not I'm talking about shutouts, just complete games. He threw eight of them to start his career. So his impact on his country, Southern California, and baseball, it will not go unnoticed, that's for sure.
Yeah, you know, a guy like Gerrit Cole, he might wind up with eight complete games for his career, and he's making $325 million. No, I remember May 8th, 1981 well when he came to Shea Stadium, and it was basically just stop what you're doing. We need to see this. But I mentioned best records are meeting. Dodgers, Yankees, you got the two lock MVPs, the two biggest markets. Danny, last year, Arizona, Texas, the least watched series ever. Fair to say the folks at Fox headquarters are basically dancing around the offices filled with glee these days.
Yeah, that's for sure. Just from a national media standpoint, too. This series is just going to get a lot more publicity from a national media perspective. For example, at CBS Sports, which is my employer, you know, we don't focus on baseball because, one, we don't broadcast baseball, and two, the ratings just frankly haven't justified covering the game of baseball as much in recent years. Last year, as you mentioned, it was Diamondbacks Rangers, and of course, we give the World Series its due treatment on social media. But when the fan bases are smaller in comparison to LA and New York, you tend to focus more on football. And that's what we have on our networks at CBS. We have NFL. We have college football. And that tends to be our biggest contributors on our social media networks. This year, however, we have already had extensive meetings on how we're going to be covering the Yankees and Dodgers World Series because there is a massive, massive appetite, not just for baseball fans, but for the common fan as well. I kind of died on this hill a year ago when it was Diamondbacks Rangers. I thought it was great for baseball to have two newer, smaller markets go into the World Series because I do think that baseball has an opportunity to grow its fan base to fan bases that haven't already been used up, if you will. Now, however, I think they took that opportunity last year, and I do think they were able to grow the game of baseball in the state of Arizona and even in the state of Texas to a degree. And now I think you can kind of go back to your blue bloods, Dodgers, Yankees, get back to your high ratings, get back to your high viewerships, and try to grow the game that direction. So from a national media perspective, you couldn't have written a better matchup. Couldn't have put it in writing to start the season better. And I'm sure the viewership and ratings are going to reap the rewards.
Talking MLB, Danny Vietti, Wake and Rake podcast. I want to talk about the Dodger lineup. You know, Mookie Betts hits two homers, drives in nine against the Mets. Shohei hits two, bats 364. Max Muncy has a 600 on base percentage. But nope, Tommy Edman is the MVP of the LCS, driving in 11. Well, what does that say about the thump the Dodgers have?
Yeah, and I think to add on to that, if you were to pick an MVP from the NLDS against the Padres, it would have been Kike Hernandez.
Right.
So you have all this superstardom. You spend $1 billion on Ohtani and Freeman and Mookie and Yamamoto. And, of course, it's Tommy Edman and Kike Hernandez, just as we all expected. I was looking at, like, World Series MVP odds this morning. And, of course, Judge Ohtani is one, too. But we see it time and time again, World Series time and NLCS, LCS time. It's the Cody Rosses. It's the Steve Pierce with the Boston Red Sox back in, I think it was 2018. It's the Jock Petersons. It's the Jorge Soleres with Atlanta. Like, these guys that just kind of come out of the woodworks, lightning in a bottle, guys that get hot at the right time. Ohtani is certainly capable. Judge is certainly capable. But in this time, come postseason, it seems like teams, the reason, at least this is my theory, that star power, or at least the star players, don't typically win those MVP trophies, because if you're an opponent, you're saying, look, if I'm going to have anybody beat me, it's going to be the 7-8-9 hitters. I'm not going to allow Aaron Judge to beat me if you're the Dodgers. And if you're if you're the Yankees, you're saying, I will not allow Ohtani to beat me. And then vice versa on the other side with Aaron Judge. So I just don't think that the stars are getting good pitches to hit. And for that reason, I'm looking at guys like Gleyber Torres. I'm looking at guys like at the bottom of the Dodgers lineup. You mentioned Max Muncy. Tommy Edman swinging a hot bat right now. So the MVP always intrigued me, just because I love seeing these lightning in a bottle guys kind of come out of the woodwork and just kind of catch it by storm.
Yeah, the first two Dodger-Yankees World Series I saw couldn't have been a bigger contrast. You had the biggest star in the world win at the first one, Reggie, and then Bucky Dent the next year. I mean, come on. As for the pitching, we saw L.A. get Jack Flaherty from Detroit at the deadline. He was dynamite in game one, but then he got crushed with a chance to close it out. Walker Buehler threw four shutout innings in game three, got thumped in the Padres series. How concerning, I guess, is the Dodgers starting, or is that the reason they carry 12, 13 arms?
I would say it's concerning, but I also had the same concern going into the postseason with their starting pitching. Here's where I think the Dodgers have thrived, and a big reason for their success in this postseason is that opposing offenses have not been able to get to their bullpen. There was a game in which the Padres, I believe, scored 10 runs. It was game two. But by the time that they actually fifth inning came along, the Padres were already had a big margin, and the Dodgers were really using the back end of their bullpen arms. They weren't using Kopech. They weren't using Blake Treinen. They weren't using Vesia. They weren't using their guys. So to me, if the Yankees want to have success against the Dodgers pitching, yes, you have to get to Flaherty. Yes, you have to get to Yamamoto. Yes, you have to get to Buehler. But more important than any of those, in my opinion, is getting to the bullpen guys. Because the Dodgers have already scripted out three wins this postseason using bullpen games. They don't even have a starting pitcher starting these games. They have a guy scripted for the first inning, second inning, third inning, and so on. And so if they want to throw a wrinkle into the Dodgers' plan, they've got to somehow rip up that script and force the Dodgers to have to pivot from the script. And if the Dodgers pivot and still have success, you tip your cap. But I think from the Yankees' perspective, they've got to find a way to get to that Dodger bullpen so it throws their plans kind of into the trash.
Getting over to the Yankees, talking with Danny Vietti, Wake and Rake podcast. I mean, historically, folks think of the Bronx Bombers, and yeah, Soto, Judge, Stanton, but they only hit 250 in the ALCS, but they had 22 walks. Danny, how unique does that make this lineup?
Yeah, it's tough. When you're facing Soto, when you're facing Judge, and then you add on top of that Gleyber Torres, who's swinging the hot bat, and then you also have Giancarlo Stanton, who I haven't even mentioned yet. He was the one, of course, who won the American League Championship Series MVP. It really is a pick-your-poison, and that's very typical for a World Series matchup, and that's why I truly do. There are a lot of people that might be upset that it is the two biggest markets. You could make the case that both of these organizations paid for the rosters. I totally hear that argument, but I do believe that for the first time in quite a while, we are getting two of the best teams, or at least the two best teams on paper, facing off against one another. You look at 1-4 from the Yankees. You look at 1-4 from the Dodgers. It's star power across the board. We have not seen this many MVPs or former MVPs. I think there's six of them. We have not seen this many in a single World Series matchup. So the star power is there. The Yankees have depth. The Dodgers have depth. It's going to come down to the little things.
People have been complaining about the Yankees' wealth since the Ruth Gehrig era, so it's kind of old hat. Couple final thoughts for Danny. Around Thanksgiving in 76, Boss George gifted me Reggie Jackson. This year, I've sent my wish list to Hal. Open the vault for Juan Soto. I know that there's speculation. I know you talk to a lot of people. Is there an inkling if he stays? You think maybe Steve Cohen and the Mets are going to throw the vault? What's your gut telling you where he is opening day 2025?
Believe it or not, I think Gerrit Cole is going to have a big impact on that for a multitude of reasons. One, Gerrit Cole is going to be pitching game one of this World Series and likely game four and possibly game seven. We'll see, how the pitching lineup rolls out. So one, he's going to have an impact on the field. Number two, Gerrit Cole has a player option after this year. And look, Gerrit Cole's getting paid plenty. Okay, $36 million a year is plenty. But in this day and age, in this market, with the way the inflation is going, Gerrit Cole could talk himself into maybe making between $36, $40 million even in free agency. We'll have to see where the market sits. But that player option could have a big impact on what the Yankees do with Juan Soto in free agency. I truly think because of who Soto's agent is, he's a Boris guy, what his history has told us, he rejected a $420 million contract extension with the Washington Nationals. The Padres reportedly had maybe not in-depth discussions on an extension, but there were certainly in-house discussions about a Soto extension. That never came to fruition. I think it's going to come down to put it in the simplest of terms, whoever offers the biggest paycheck. Are the Yankees willing to do that? That kind of remains to be seen. But I will say, if the Yankees end up hoisting the trophy, Juan Soto's already having a monster postseason. He already had his hero moment in the American League Championship Series. It would be very hard-pressed not to offer a Brinks truck to Juan Soto if the Yankees end up hoisting this trophy.
Well, I've offered 5% of my 401k. I don't know what kind of impact it's going to make. So here we are. I don't know if we could ask for more as baseball fans. The stage is set, coast to coast. What's your lean? You think we see banner number 28 at 161st Street in the Bronx, or number 8 just off the 110 freeway?
I'm going to throw in a caveat and kind of go back to how I answered your question a couple questions ago and say that if the Yankees are able to get to the Dodgers bullpen, I believe the Yankees will have success in the series and be able to hoist their 28th trophy. If the Yankees do not force the Dodgers off script, if the Dodgers bullpen continues to dominate offenses like they have in this postseason, a good offense in the Padres and a very good offense in the New York Mets, I think the Dodgers end up hoisting the trophy. My gut tells me Dodgers in 7. That would be the simplest of answer. But again, I really do think it comes down to whether the Yankees can get to that Dodger bullpen.
Yikes, a lot to think about. Like I said, what a stage, what great sports theater. Folks, he's Danny Vietti, along with the guy who won a ring with the 2013 Bo Sox, Will Middlebrooks, brings you the Wake and Rake podcast, again on Twitter, at Wake and Rake Pod, for the man himself, at Danny Vietti. Danny, always fun, always a ton of great insight. Enjoy it. Thanks for coming on. And, of course, look forward to talking some post-World Series and a little hot stove as well.
Anytime, Steve. Enjoy the series, man.
All right. Take it easy, Danny. Thanks a lot. Great stuff.